Hi, Marty Lurie here on KBR 680. It's time for the philosopher. Javier Lopez joins us. Boy, I said I like doing this every couple of weeks. There's always issues in baseball.
Well, definitely. If you get to get some time away, there's always going to be something that pops up. And you know, some of the things that you were alluding to before this interview were right on the head. You know, we're moving on to the second half. We've established ourselves a little bit in the West, which we needed to do. And, you know, obviously teams are going to be making moves. There's a lot of storylines going.
Yeah, you know, but also there's a lot of loyalty in this organization to people. And even though everyone can say, well, you may need another starting pitcher, you can need this or that, doesn't look like the Giants are anxious to move anybody.
It doesn't seem to be their forte since I've been here. Again, I think they make a move if everything turns out that they need it and it's something that they don't mind parting away with some of the pieces that they have. You know, obviously they have a lot of prospects here that they believe in and don't want to pass them up for rentals. But, you know, sometimes you got to take that chance, and I'm sure Bobby and the rest of the guys are doing their due diligence for the next week or so.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Javier Lopez with us. Things are always happening in baseball, and when I grew up, if a batter maybe hit a home run and trotted around the bases and slapped high fives, maybe he would be thrown at the next time. Now, pitchers throw gum at people.
Yeah, that was a first for me. That was a first. Dale Thayer usually is pretty well, you know, he's reserved out there on the mound, but he took exception to Sanchez's swing, and, you know, to each his own. Obviously, again, nobody wants to go out there and get hit. Nobody wants to be, you know, if it's a power hitter that does it often, maybe you let it slide. You know, Sanchez just recently getting called back up, but you know what? It was a big swing for us, and it was in a park that we don't play well as of late. So, you know, he did admire it a little bit, but throwing your gum, that was an interesting way to do it, but, you know, again, to each his own.
All right, Javier Lopez with us. You ever get into a fight? I don't know if I've ever asked you that. Ever get into words on the mound?
No, I've never actually been the one throwing the ball at somebody and having the altercation start. I'm always the guy that has to run in from the bullpen, and it always seems to be from a full bullpen that's really far away. So there's only been two scraps that I think I've been able to get into, so to speak, and that's just pulling bodies apart. That's all you really try to do. You don't want to mess up your hands. That's how you make your livelihood. So a lot of the time it's just pushing and shoving and some colorful four-letter language going on in there. But, you know, beyond that, you know, we have to you have to support and battle for your teams, but you got to do it in a smart way.
Yeah, you don't want to get hurt in this thing. Well, look at Affeldt in the Philadelphia series and the championship series. He stayed out there. Mark Gardner said, no, you stay here. And it was a very big part because he came in and handled the Phillies. Where were you in that mess?
I was actually going down the two flights of stairs and heading out to the field, and same thing. Ran out to the field, and by then, the dust had already settled. Everything is already done, and you get a little upset. But at that point in time, it wasn't too bad because it was still a little chilly in Philly, so it got your legs loose before I was used later on that game.
All right, Javier Lopez, nice to have the philosopher with us. We're getting down to that point of the season. Now every series becomes important. Every game has a story. Injuries become important, and maybe a little bit of scoreboard watching.
Yeah, absolutely. I think all those things come into play. Again, we were talking about it, and the health is a major issue, and I think we're finally on the right side of that path. We were having a lot of bodies missing significant time in the first half, but, you know, Nori should be back up and running, and we got Affeldt back. We got the starting pitchers kind of coming back, rounding into form for us, and Hunter Pence now getting the at-bats that he's missing in the first half. But, you know, all these things are kind of we're getting hot at the right time as far as that's concerned.
All right, this weekend is Hall of Fame weekend, and some significant people are going in. What a class. I mean, you've got Pedro Martinez, Randy Johnson, John Smoltz, Craig Biggio going in. I'd love to get your comments about those people. You've seen them over the years. I don't know if you ever played with any of them. Had you ever played with any of those guys?
I played with John Smoltz at the very end. I went to spring training with the Red Sox with Pedro Martinez. I had no other experience with Maddox or Glavin or even Biggio. I take that back. Biggio was there for my debut, actually. We played against the Astros, and I did not face him, though. I faced all the other killer bees with Berkman and Bagwell and Blum, but I did not face Biggio. But, you know, I think, yeah, Randy never – I was in the minor leagues when he was with the Diamondbacks, and all I remember him is coming down to throw a sim game, a B game during spring training, and just stared at our entire bench of worthless, pathetic, single-A baseball starters. I was a starter at the time trying to make something in my career, and he just looked at us like we didn't even belong to watch him throw. And, you know, that's part of that menacing look that he always has. When you talk to him, he's a good guy, you know, but that it's all about appearances sometimes.
You know, now he's a friendly guy. You know, it's always, you know, when it's time to say goodbye, you say hello.
That's exactly how it is. And, you know, it's If there's a guy I feel for, it's actually Biggio, because the story has been Johnson and Smoltz and the starters and rightfully so with Pedro and all those guys throwing the ball. I mean, the way they did and dominated it's something you're not going to see a whole lot of, and especially for a whole generation to get represented like that. You know, so Biggio's the lone man holding the flag for the position guys, but that's okay. I mean, that's not such a bad deal.
Javier Lopez, the philosopher, is here. Do you like the Hall of Fame weekend? Do you get into it just to sort of recall how these people played?
I like it. You know, I think it's something that once I got up to Cooperstown and got to see it as a kid, it's a place I've always wanted to be. You know, I know my career is never going to lead to the Hall of Fame, but it's one of those things where you really, truly respect the guys that have been able to get it done and do it for not only a long period of time, but dominate for a long period of time. And that's, you know, there's 300-some people in that thing. There's 18,000 people that have played this game. So it's a select hall, and, you know, it's a special time. And I know those players and their families are going to enjoy it, and the players that played with them as well.
Yeah, the other one I want you to comment on is Pedro Martinez. And, you know, a lot of TV time with him, of course, with the Red Sox. You know the story there. But Don Zimmer throwing him down, and Pedro against Cleveland coming in and in long relief. Pedro against the Yankees, my daddy, and all that stuff. But what a pitcher, Pedro Martinez. And, you know, he's another guy that started with the Dodgers and ended up with two or three other teams.
Yeah, Pedro is a great guy to really, when you can sit back and watch a lot of video, if you had that time, and I know that's how this generation works nowadays, watching him work was really impressive. He didn't sit on just one pitch. A lot of guys you see nowadays, you know, have velocity, and rightfully so. They're going to sit on the gas till there's a reason to come with something else. But he was able to not only throw for velocity, but really set up his secondary pitches. And honestly, I would feel like most of the time when he really became a great pitcher in those back-to-back Cy Young years, I feel like his fastball was his number two pitch. And I feel like the curveball and the changeup were even, you know, could pass up for number one at times. They'd share that spot. So the guy was able to pitch, set guys up. Not a big-bodied boy, but you know what? He had a lot of flexibility, and his fingers in particular. That's a long story. You can always put his hand flat on the table and be able to move almost 90 degrees, and that's what gave him that change-up velocity and movement. And, you know, he's a truly special talent, and being able to sit back and actually see some of those highlight reels, not only from his rookie year, but how he evolved as a player and a pitcher, and still contribute when the velocity started dipping, that he was still being able to rely on the off-speed stuff was pretty amazing.
Yeah, very special, and that's why a Hall of Famer, Javier Lopez. Yeah, good description. It was very nice. The strike zone. Again, every couple of weeks you and I talk, and now all of a sudden the strike zone is back in the news again. There's a minor league team in San Rafael that's going to have a computerized strike zone. Eric Burns got in the middle of that on Tuesday night. What do you think of the strike zone and umpires and what's going on here, and where is it all going?
If I had those answers, I'd be in the commissioner's office. I feel like, one of the things that happens with the strike zone is you have to decide as a team and as a league, really as a league, what you want to be. Do you want human error? Do you want the human element to be a part of it, or do we want to have the robots do it? I mean, everything's so computerized now. Is that what we want our sports to be? That's what you have to decide. And I think ultimately everybody's going to tell you that they're going to want a little bit of human error, human element in this, because then that gives you storylines. You know, you can't blame an umpire for something going on. You can't. There's no storyline besides the win or a loss, as far as I'm concerned. You know, because even if you have umpires out there, now there's a replay system. So even if they get the call wrong, that can be reversed. So it's just it's going to depend on how guys really want to do it. But I feel like I just personally enjoy the timeless part of this game, and the human element is something that I think I was grown up in. You know, my parents took me to ball games. That's what I witnessed. And good, bad, or otherwise, those are the stories that you read, and that's how you formulate your fan base, and that's how you get your passion. I feel like sometimes, you know, you want to take it out on an umpire. He's doing his job, but you have to pick somebody to blame. And you know, if you're just blaming players all the time, that might not make for a very cohesive bunch.
Yeah, I love it. Great answer. That's why you're the philosopher. Very good. Very good. I like that. Eddie Montague, you know, former National League umpire. You know, Eddie said, "What are they going to do? Come out with an iPad and yell at an iPad? Is that next?"
Yeah, exactly. Again, I know everybody wants the information, and granted, if the technology's there, you want that kind of stuff. But, again, it's nice to see it maybe in your lap what the strike zone was and have the ball or strike just called arbitrarily by the umpire. And then you can, still yell at the guy, and you can point to your iPhone or your iPad or whatever tablet you have and be like, look, it went through the box and you called it a ball. But, that's something that's going to have to be figured out, and I'm sure the commissioner and the Players Association will get together on that.
All right. You're a pitcher that loves to throw low in the zone. I've seen guys like you my whole life, and when they keep it low in the zone, they're unhittable, but you have to get the call because it is low in the zone. You've got to get that call. How do you feel umpires call your pitches?
Well, I think a lot of it is predicated on how I'm warming up and where Buster or Hector or Susak, whoever might be catching me at the time, frames those pitches. And I think we have three catchers that do a pretty good job of doing that. I think the umpires, I maybe get them to stretch a little bit down in the zone because that's where I'm working predominantly. But, again, it's if I throw one up, I'm probably not going to get that call that a traditional thrower might get. If they're going thigh high to belt high, they might get that call. For me, that's really going up in the zone. So, it's a give-and-take situation. But I feel, for the most part, all umpires do a pretty good job out there calling the pitches. And again, with Buster catching back there, I think he's in league leaders of stealing strikes. And I think that's an important stat when you really look at pitch framing and stuff like that, since everything, again, is so analytical that you look at what Buster can do back there. It's a special thing to have a guy like that back there.
You know, the infield has been a pleasure to watch. Imagine, look, you get a lot of one-pitch outs, and you're coming for one pitch, double play, goodbye, and you don't throw the gum at anybody and you just walk off the mound. It's very nice of you. But I'm thinking of Crawford and Panic, and I'm thinking of Lou Whitaker and Trammell, and maybe some double play combinations you played with, because when that ball is on the ground with a runner on first, hit the shorter second, I'm ready to write down 6-4-3 or 4-6-3. Other double play combinations for you that maybe you remember over the years that you said, wow, those guys could play together?
Well, I always felt that these two are going to have a bright future as far as that's concerned. I think, again, like you said, I think as a pitcher, any pitcher on our staff will tell you, when it's on the ground, to either one of those guys, you're expecting to come off the field or get a double play. So that's always nice. I haven't had the combos like that. I think the closest I got was a little bit of Alex Gonzalez. When he was in Boston, Boston infield's a tough infield. He made 6 errors the entire season. So that was one heck of a shortstop. And then Dustin Pedroia playing second base, and Alex Cor being over there at shortstop. Alex, great hands, great kind of player, and those guys turn into one of those things you could jot it down, it was going to happen. When Uribe had some time over at short when I first got traded over here, I felt the same way with him and Freddie. Freddie was kind of underrated as far as his defense, but if he put glove on it, you were going to get out. And that's... those are probably the best ones, but I think we're about to see the best one here, and I'm fortunate to just be on the same team as them right now.
All right. Last week, you asked me a couple of questions 2 weeks ago. It was before the All-Star game, and really, it's a big hit. People liked it, so I'm going to give you a chance again. If you'd like to ask a couple, I'm going to turn the microphone over to Javier Lopez, and I'm ready.
Well, thank you, Marty. I'm going to take this opportunity to ask you just a few questions. Obviously, again, we're rolling into the second half of the season, and we need to establish our presence in the West besides against the Dodgers. And I think we obviously did that. We had a chance to repeat our opening series against the Diamondbacks and the Padres in the second half, which is very rare, but we were able to do that. And after watching that and watching two different giant teams in those ballparks, how do you feel about our start to the second half?
Well, I think it's terrific, and I think what I see is a mentally tough baseball team. I see a team that's working the count a lot more, that's got confidence at the plate, and I see young players who are now like sophomores and juniors, where when we started all this thing back in April, you didn't know what you were going to get. So I think what I'm seeing is the kind of team I want to see that's going to go into August and go into September. I always say, like for you, September's when the pros take over. And I got a feeling now when the Giants take the field, it's all business and more business, and the young people who are on the field know how to take care of business, plus you're healthy. So I think you're light years ahead from where you were at the beginning of the season, because now the form is taking shape. I think you're a mentally tough team right now.
Okay, very nice. Changing gears altogether and closing in on the trade deadline. obviously everybody wants to be the first one and get the scoop, whether it's your Ken Rosenthal, Tim Kirkjian, Buster Olney, whoever it might be, even Joe Schmo from local paper. With Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, do you think that damages the credibility of the game, or maybe even the credibility of that sports writer just trying to get the drop?
I think so. I think what it does, it sets up disappointment, because they talk about it every single day for a month, of who's going to get traded, who's available. Then when you see these trades happen, they're for mid-level minor league prospects. And at some point I say to myself, you know something, it's too much, because they're just trying to get some buzz on the internet. Because why not keep the player? So he'll walk. Now you get a draft choice. I'd rather have a draft choice than the 12th and 8th pick of your system. So I think the whole thing is overblown. It never lives up to its hype. It never does. And I think we're going to see some of that now. I don't see David Price going anywhere. I don't see Cole Hamels going anywhere. Cueto may go somewhere, but he had 6 walks in his last start. What is he going to bring? Chapman? They're not going to get rid of Chapman. Why would they want to get rid of Chapman? So I see it as fun. It's great for you and me to talk about it, but I think it's overhyped. And I think the thing that fans have to realize is when the trades are made, you're getting minor league prospects coming back, and that's what has to be balanced here. How much is this player going to help my team in 6 weeks for me to give up my first and third prospect in my organization for a rental? And I think that's the issue.
Very good. And lastly, I have one more question, and it's really on the format that we're doing here. Talk radio, sports talk, terrestrial radio is basically on the way out, you know, with satellite and Sirius XM and things like that. But why do you think this format still works? Is it the fact that the fan base in the city here and in Oakland across the bay, that fans are so passionate for their local clubs that it works here and maybe not other places? Or do you think it's just people still thirst for more information and just want to their 5 minutes on the radio to enlighten maybe you as the host or maybe the fans that are listening as to what they might be thinking?
Well, they want to hear the voices. I think that's a key thing, because you can read Twitter. You can read everything. I see the picture on Instagram of Joe Panic at the winery, or Tim Hudson's family taking a bike ride against the Golden Gate Bridge. Terrific. But they want to hear you. They want to hear your voice. They want to hear you talk about the strike zone and the umpires. And the other thing is, and what you do so well, baseball is a story. We do this every couple of weeks to catch up with the rhythm of the season. Baseball is a story. It's like going out to eat in a restaurant. We talked about the criminal law last time. The season starts, you're just pulling into the parking lot. You sit down in April, you're just taking a look at the menu. You get to June, maybe the appetizers, you're finished with that. You get into July, you're looking at now the main course. In August, you say, boy, that wasn't so bad. And in September, you're thinking about maybe dessert. And in October, you're thinking about paying the bill. So it goes like that, and baseball is a story. We are the authors of it, and people like to hear it, but they like the rhythm of the story. And that's what I think people like to listen to.
Well, I know that's why I'm a fan of sports talk, good, bad, and otherwise. I feel like you get enlightened dialogue from not only, sports talk hosts like yourself, but an engaging fan. And that's always something that contributes to the game.
Yeah, I do. And I think fans want it. They want to hear you. They want to hear your analysis. And I think the story of baseball, you never know where it's going to go. I'll give you another one. We can save this for next time. It's a great book. You know that, I always say it. Every day you read another chapter, you don't know where it's going to go, but it's going to have a tremendous ending, and we're heading into that. And we'll talk about this the next couple of weeks when you guys come back from the long road trip. But here we go again. You give me the 6 teams that are getting in, the 5 teams that are getting in. You can't do it. You can't do it because you don't know where it's going. So that's the beauty of it, and it starts now in August. This is where the book says, I'm not putting this book down. I want to read the next chapter today. Now, this is where we're going.
Well, Marty, once again, I'd like to thank you for this opportunity, and I look forward to it in the next couple of weeks.
All right, Javi, thanks so much. You're doing well. I like this. All right, thanks for being with us, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
No problem. Thank you very much.
All right, coming back on KMBR 680, the sports leader.